Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Good evening. Today is Friday, February 26, 2010. I'm Andrew Longhurst, and you're listening to News 101 on CITR. Good evening. Today is Friday, February 26, 2010. I'm Andrew Longhurst, and you're listening to News 101 on CITR.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The event has been organized in response to the media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pebbing was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced student and community newscast, offering listeners local, national, and international news from a fully independent perspective.
What's left of us? Just a big mistake. It's nothing more.
Tonight, we continue to bring you special Olympics coverage from a fully independent perspective. We'll speak with Greg McMullen from the BC Civil Liberties Association, who will be giving us an update on the Legal Observer Program. We have a report from Kieran Cudahy about homelessness in the Red Tent campaign. We also have an update from the Olympics Resistance Network on their ongoing activities and plans for the closing ceremonies demonstration. We'll end the show by speaking live with Tristan Markle from Vancouver Action about the tent-in that occurred today at the BC Housing Office to demand that all levels of government and the BC and BC Housing take immediate action to provide social housing to residents of the Olympic Homeless Tent Village who are homeless, underhoused, and precariously housed. And first, we have Greg McMullen from the BCCLA, and he's here to talk with us about the Legal Observer Program. Thanks for being on the line, Greg.
Well, thanks for having me again.
So last time we last spoke to the BCCLA about the Legal Observer Program last Monday. Can you give us an update about what the program has been up to the last few days?
Oh, well, the last few days have generally been pretty quiet. We've had, once again, our observers out at Tent Village and doing a lot more patrols of the downtown area and watching sort of the general public interact with security forces.
And has the relationship with the Vancouver Police Department changed at all over the last few days?
Things have got a bit tense lately. We've had generally pretty good interactions with police, but we've noticed a lot more sort of intimidation tactics, I would say, asking observers' names and their political interests, like what do they think of protests, do they hate police, that sort of thing, and pretty aggressive use of cameras.
So you see this as an escalation in terms of how they're engaging with the legal observers?
It's something we didn't really notice for the first little bit. It could be because the whole thing was pretty new and things were too busy for police to take that sort of approach. But the past little while, we've definitely been hearing more reports of police who have been making observers feel a bit uncomfortable.
Do you have any specific incidents that you could comment on? Or is there anything in general that... more specifically, that comments that legal observers have received, just to give our listeners a sense
of... We've noticed, in general, sort of a trend toward, during arrests, if observers are videotaping arrests, police might be spreading a bit of misinformation. We're not completely sure what they're saying to people, but there will be a conversation that's kind of too low for the camera to pick up. And then the person being arrested will be really upset with legal observers all of a sudden. Okay. So it seems like the police might be telling them, I don't know, that the video will be up all over YouTube or something like that. And it seems like the object is to make the volunteer observers feel pretty uncomfortable being out there.
Right. And what are some of the locations that the legal observers have been at over the course of the last few days?
The past little while, we've been everywhere. We stopped in at the BC Housing visit that happened this afternoon. We've been around downtown through the Live City areas. We've just sent a team out to Critical Mass.
Are you able to give us an update on that observation of Critical Mass this afternoon, which is happening, starting to get underway right now? Have you been in contact?
Well, we haven't heard any reports back from the field yet, but we have several teams of observers who will be going along on bikes to keep up with the crowd and with the police.
And do you expect there to be a reaction from Vancouver police for Critical Mass?
Well, I mean, what we've seen so far is a pretty hands-off approach for most protests. And I would hope that that will continue and that it'll just be, I mean, an average critical mass in Vancouver. So, you know, a little bit of tension and maybe some interaction with motorists and stuff, but nothing too serious is what we're hoping for.
Right. And I want to actually jump back to the tent-in that happened today at the BC Housing Office today in Vancouver. Were there any incidents from that?
Our observers who came back from that shift said that they didn't even see a single police officer there. Things went very peacefully. They came, they made their point, and left without any interaction with security at all.
Okay. Well, is there anything else that our listeners should hear from you?
We're excited about gearing up for the last weekend. We think it's going to be a busy one for us once again. But it should be interesting. We have some interesting events coming up over the weekend.
Do you mind just going through what events the Legal Observers will be at over this weekend?
Well, amongst others, we're planning to have people at the Pivot Action at the Canada Pavilion tomorrow at noon. We plan to have people at the Pirates for Justice flash mob, wherever that winds up happening. And we've been hearing that the ORN has a demonstration planned for the closing ceremonies, and we will be in attendance there as well.
Great. Well, thank you, Greg. We really appreciate being on the line and joining us.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. And that was Greg McMullen from the BCCLA Legal Observer Program, just to give us an update about the current activities of the Legal Observers and the locations they've been at. We're now going to take some time for public service announcements, but please stay tuned. More Special Olympics coverage is coming up right after these announcements. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could, the only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, daily grassroots, global, unembedded, international, independent news hour. And this is CITR 101.9 FM.
LiveVan.com is Vancouver's most reputable community-driven concert calendar. New shows are listed daily by the city's most prominent promoters, but also by you. The musicians and fans were the driving force of our local music scene. LiveVan.com's listings are different because they're personalized. They're integrated with local music directories that are constantly updated by the bands, musicians, and businesses who refer to them as they pick locations and lineups for their newest upcoming shows. and no one's barred from contributing, since we all know fans know more about the players than anyone. So visit livemusicvancouver.com for the latest major and independent event listings. And while you're at it, check out our archives and discover how closely we all work together in this community, putting on the shows you love.
And up next, we got a little heat hit for you. A heat hit. I have no idea what that is. But this is from the Mixdown.
You are now listening
to CITR
101.9 FM Vancouver.
Welcome back. I'm Andrew Longhurst, and you're listening to News 101, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. While local Vancouver residents have their own feelings about homelessness in the city, Kieran Cudahy filed this report to bring us an international perspective on the issue.
Hi, I'm Kieran Cudahy. 2 weeks ago tonight, the Olympics kicked off with a lavish opening ceremony before the world's press at GM Place. In the meantime, we have seen triumph and heartache, from south of the Richmond Oval to as far north as Whistler. However, as regular listeners will know, it is not only Vanock who have been busily organising around the city for the last fortnight. A multitude of protests, campaigns and events have been going on in order to draw attention to the plight of some of Vancouver's least fortunate, in particular, the homeless community. Organised by Pivot Legal Society, the Red Tent campaign has been at the forefront of these attempts to capture public opinion and try influence government housing policy. In order to gauge the extent to which the Red Tent campaign was getting its message out, I spoke this week with a number of people who have come to live in the city in recent months. Not surprisingly, there was broad consensus that homelessness is a serious problem facing Vancouver.
Yeah, definitely. It's very obvious from the moment you get here, you know. It's quite clear that there's a lot of homeless people on the streets. You know, you just walking off the train station, there's people lying down on the ground after taking drugs. There's people asleep on the ground. It's pretty horrific from the moment you get here, really. And, yeah, I'm just pretty shocked by it all.
Almost everyone I spoke with shared a similar impression of the homelessness issue, having been shocked upon their arrival in Vancouver at the sheer magnitude of people forced to live in the streets. However, when they were asked about the ongoing Red Tent campaign, the majority of people either knew very little about it or were not aware of it at all.
I've heard just someone mention it. I know it's pretty obvious tents for homeless people. That's pretty much all I know. I haven't seen any. I work in Richmond though, so... Yeah, I haven't seen any, to be honest.
Well, yeah, I've been working downtown for the last 5-6 months, and I've never heard of the Red Tent campaign, and I've never even seen a Red Tent downtown, so I'm totally unaware of it.
I've heard of the Red Tent campaign, but I haven't seen or heard anything about what they actually do and what they're doing in the city right now.
Of the people I managed to speak with, only one was able to identify the nature of the campaign and sympathise with its aims.
I've been here since November, and yeah, it struck me that the amount of homelessness here is crazy. I couldn't believe it when I got here. I heard about the Red Tent campaign and decided to check it out. And it was just crazy that the government has no housing policy. So... I'm just hoping that the Olympics will attract attention to this and it'll bring a change to the government policy in relation to housing, the homeless, basically.
As I have said, the people I spoke with have all only recently moved to the city, and as such, they do not represent an accurate cross-section of the overall population. Although the fact remains that despite their presence in and about downtown Vancouver for the past 2 weeks, they were largely unaware of any organised and concerted effort to focus attention on the issue of homelessness. This begs the question, could Pivot Legal Society, the Red Tent Campaign and other like-minded groups be doing more to get their message out to otherwise unaware Vancouverites. After all, with more of the public on your side, the greater your political capital and the greater your chance of bringing about real change.
And thanks to Kieran Cudahy for filing that report. Yesterday I spoke with Anna Hunter, an organizer with the Olympics Resistance Network, about their ongoing resistance activities and also about the demonstration that is planned for the closing ceremonies this Sunday, February 28th. Almost to the end of the Olympic Games, and the closing ceremonies are coming up this weekend. What's the Olympic Resistance Network been up to at this point, and where is organizing at this point in terms of protests and rallies and just day-to-day activities?
The Olympic Resistance Network called for our official convergence between the 10th and the 15th of February. And on the final day, on the 15th, Tent City was set up in the downtown east side to highlight the ongoing problems of gentrification and poverty and homelessness in the city, and also the problems that have been exacerbated by the Olympics. And so that has been ongoing. It's been a huge success holding that space. It's been happening on a lot owned by Concord Pacific, one of the biggest condo developers in the city, and also a recent Olympic sponsor. So that's been maintained. Other than that, the ORN has been building and planning for a demonstration to coincide with the closing ceremonies on the last day of the Games, an opportunity for people to express the unified voice that exists in Vancouver that is still opposed to the Games, even on its last day.
And I want to jump back just to the Tent City. Has the VPD expressed any further concern? I know that they said they would not be forcing the Tent City off the site. Have there been any more recent developments in regards to that?
The Tent City has been very well defended by members of the community and people who have been living down there. So, no, there has been no movement from people of the Tent City. And yesterday, some of the organizers and people involved in the Tent City issued a request to BC Housing, and basically an ultimatum saying that they need to house the people who are living down there and have no other options, or else they won't be leaving. So I know that's ongoing right now.
And now, can we talk a little bit about the protest that's going to coincide with the closing ceremonies of the Games scheduled for the 28th? Is that correct?
Yeah.
And what's being planned and organized for that event?
Nothing specifically has been planned other than a call out for a large mobilization on that day, to highlight the fact that the resistance is still here, that people are still not happy with the Games, and to show that, you know, even though the Games are going to be gone, that many organizers and many activists won't be gone and we'll still be here and we'll still be fighting the impacts that the Games are going to have on our community, not only during the last 2 weeks, but for the next many years.
And at what location will the protest take place at?
The demonstration is starting at the corner of Smythe and Cambie at 1 o'clock on Saturday the 28th.
Okay, and will there be a march as well?
I'm not sure about the exact specifics. I think that location was chosen because of its proximity to the venues and to many people that will be going in and out of both the final hockey games and also the closing ceremonies.
Okay. And I want to talk a little bit about the convergence itself and sort of specifically what a convergence is and the role it played during the games. How would you characterize this convergence? Maybe first, can you give a little background and context to what convergences are and the role it played during the games?
I mean, convergences are basically an opportunity when people come together unified under a single banner or, you know, one sort of cause, and usually it happens during an event. And so our call for the convergence was just simply that we wanted as many people as possible who are opposed to the games and who, you know, could make it out to Vancouver to come. So, you know, we made that call many, many years ago, and the response and the reaction was quite positive. Many people made it out from all over Canada and the States, and even internationally. We had many people here the convergence included a two-day people summit, which was highly successful. You know, we had over 500 people attending, and we had numerous speakers from all over speaking about a variety of issues and the various impacts of the Games, not only here but also at past host Olympic cities and future host Olympic cities. You know, we were a part of the 2010 welcoming committee that organized a massive demonstration of over 3,500 people on Saturday. We were organizers of the heart attack demo that happened on the Saturday, and then supported the Women's Memorial March, which was, you know, one of the largest memorial marches that has ever happened, as well as the tent city and a variety of other small localized actions. So the convergence was really just an opportunity to highlight all of the issues and concerns around the Games and for people to do that together.
Is there any concern that the demonstration to coincide with the closing ceremonies could be groups that do engage in more criminal activities? And is there any fear that the response to that from police and security officials could be problematic?
I don't think there's any fear of that. One thing that ORN has been clear about from the start is that we do respect the diversity of tactics. We respect, you know, people resisting in the ways that they see fit, and respecting that amongst everyone. And I think we have seen that clearly demonstrated in our protests. The Saturday or the Friday demo was very different from the Saturday demo, and that was very intentional. So whether there's fear, no, I think, you know, people have a respect for the different ways in which your voice can be heard and the ways in which people can protest, and I think that we'll see how unified the anti-Olympic movement is despite different tactics that are chosen.
Now, have many activists from the States and other cities and other Canadian cities, have they returned home, or is there still quite a presence in the city from activists who are resisting the Games?
I couldn't tell you exactly how many people are here or have left, but, you know, some people were not able to stay for the entire 2 weeks, but most people stayed for the duration of the convergence, which was only called until the 15th.
Okay. Any other further comments?
I think that's it.
Okay, well, Anna, you're one of many organizers with the Olympic Resistance Network, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Anna Hunter, an organizer with the Olympics Resistance Network. I spoke to her yesterday about the ongoing activities of the ORN and about the what is being planned for the closing ceremony demonstration. We're now going to take a quick break, but stay tuned. Up next, we bring you a live interview with Tristan Markle of Vancouver Action about the tent-in that occurred this afternoon at the BC Housing Office to demand that all levels of government and BC Housing take immediate action to provide social housing to residents of the Olympic Homeless Tent Village who are homeless, underhoused, and precariously housed.
Radio audience. We're investing industrial noise and goth. Tune into the Vampire's Ball. Midnight, 4 a.m. Friday nights, right here at 101.9 CITR FM in Vancouver, www.citr.ca.
I can listen to them and go, this is really cool stuff, and people want to make music like this, and they never have, and they never will. I can listen to them and go, this is really cool stuff, and people don't make music like this, and they never have, and they never will.
Listen, radio is an important means of communicating 3,000 years of habit in terms of diapering of babies.
Well, please tell me more.
Because radio reaches people, including those hard-to-get young people. Radio goes where they go and talks their language.
recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild.
The East Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the helpline...
Thanks to sky-high gas prices, we can convince America that more drilling is the answer. High gas prices? Drill more. Prices still high? Try drilling in a wildlife refuge or off a nice beach.
Our traditional energy resources are limited. Luckily, it's easy for students like you to conserve energy.
Woke up late for class? Buy some time in the morning by taking a shorter shower. Cut down by 1 minute every day and save enough to fund your daily caffeine fix for over a week. Plus, you save on electricity and water. Install a water-saving showerhead to save even more.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the helpline is one of many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The helpline number is 604-696-4666 or contact us online at www.aidsvancouver.org.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:30. Thanks for being with us. Tristan Markle is on the line with us. He's an organizer with Vancouver Action, and he's here on the line to discuss the tent-in, which occurred today at the BC Housing Office here in Vancouver. Thanks for being with us, Tristan.
Thank you.
Can you just tell us about what happened and describe what the tent-in looked like today?
Yes. About 10 homeless folks or precariously housed folks went directly to BC Housing's office in the downtown east side to demand appropriate housing. And the background for why this happened is on February 15th, about 2 weeks ago, Downtown Eastside residents and homeless people created a tent city at 58 West Hastings. It's an empty lot right on Olympic Corridor owned by Concord Pacific, who's the biggest condo developer in the Downtown Eastside. And they had leased the land out to Vanock, which was using the empty lot as a parking lot for the Olympics. And a coalition of groups led by Downtown Eastside residents, like the Power of Women group, the Women's Center, and Streams of Justice, a Christian group, and Vancouver Action, took over the site. And it grew. The first day there was 25 homeless people. The next day there are 50 tents and residents. The next day there's 100. And now there's about 200 people living on the site. Half of them are homeless or precariously housed. And so what happened today was about 2 weeks later, after lots of meetings at the tent village, a contingent of homeless people went to BC Housing to demand that all the homeless residents of the tent village get safe, appropriate housing immediately.
And can you tell us a little bit about Vancouver Action as an organization and what the organization does?
It's pretty simple. We're in a supportive role. So our philosophy is that we take the lead of low-income people and poor people or whatever you want to call it, and we support them logistically in their campaigns. So their campaign here is threefold. So we didn't develop the campaign. This was developed by Power of Women Group and Carnegie Community Action Project and Downtown Eastside residents, and they said the issues that they want to address are homelessness, first. Second, gentrification. And third, the criminalization of poverty. And so Vancouver Action is mostly young people that do support work with these campaigns. So we help organize, we help with press releases, we help with radio interviews like this. And so far it's been pretty good collaboration.
And the BC Housing Office is on Terminal. If someone was driving by or walking by, what would it have looked like? Were there tents pitched? What was the general atmosphere?
Well, the atmosphere is it's a symbolic thing where you actually have homeless people going right into the office, right into BC Housing to put pressure there. And what you would have seen is a contingent of people with signs and reading out their demands with the support of the tent village behind them. And it was a symbolic one. They returned to the tent village after, but it just shows that a tent village can be a place where people can organize and be, you know, lobby in pretty effective ways. And over the past, this action has just been one part of a series of lobbying tactics over the past few days, including letter writing to city councillors and to ministry. And what's happened is, so far we have secured housing for more than half of the homeless people in the camp, but not the rest, so we have to continue to pressure. And it's difficult because there are not enough social housing units. The stock is too low, and there is just not appropriate housing, especially for people in the camp who are single mothers. The only rooms that are being offered through the negotiations with BC Housing are single room occupancy, so they don't have bathrooms or kitchens. And so being a single mother in those rooms is not appropriate, so that's why we had to have a more direct action today to insist that we get more appropriate housing for the single mothers.
Just so our listeners know, what role does BC Housing play and what are they responsible for?
Yeah, so BC Housing manages provincially owned housing stock, and the city of Vancouver also does own some housing stock, but not as much. The province is the main social housing provider. In the lead-up to the Olympic Games, there were particular recommendations and commitments that were part of the so-called positive Olympic legacy, and BC Housing was at the forefront of that. BC Housing was responsible for building over 3,000 new units of social housing, but they did not do that. They have built less than 500 now. So the legacy commitment was 3,200. They did not meet it. They built 500. Secondly, they were supposed to protect the low-income, the private low-income stock, which is the SROs, or the single-room occupancy units in downtown Eastside. There's about 5,000 to 6,000 of those, and they're very precarious. Developers have been buying them up and holding on to them for condo development. So the province did buy up about 15% of the low-income units in the lead-up to the Olympics, but they have not renovated most of them, and they remain in abominable conditions that are not appropriate for anyone to live in. So there are some vacancies there. It's cockroaches, bed bugs, and they will crumble to the ground if there's an earthquake. And the reason we suspect that they are not upgrading these buildings like they're supposed to is that they plan on selling them off to developers after the Olympics. Not that we will let them do that easily, but that is probably their plan.
And I just want to ask you, BC Housing maintains and runs the housing, but in some way, is it effective to be targeting them as an agency? Should the provincial government be the body that should be held responsible for this?
BC Housing reports to the Ministry of Housing and Social Development, so they are the government. But we wouldn't only do that. Our letter writing campaign over the past few days targeted especially city councillors and the city, because they feel the pressure most. You're right. and the ministry, but the Ministry of Social Development, run by Rich Coleman, is notoriously doesn't give a shit about homeless people. So they never respond to anything. So you can't get anything out of them. But the city and BC Housing are two very important people to put pressure on.
And I want to ask you, at the Tenton, did representatives from BC Housing speak with activists and those who are homeless there at the Tenton today? Or was there any dialogue between BC Housing and those that participated in the Tenton?
This was more of, more of a direct action media thing. Most of the negotiation goes on not in public like that.
And was there media present at the Tenton today?
There was not as much as we would have hoped today. There's been a lot of media present at the Tent Village. We've had lots of press conferences, but I think, unfortunately, we could have used some more today.
And now are reporters still being asked not to enter the Tent City?
Oh, you were talking about the Tent City at 58.
Yeah, I'm shifting.
The media protocol were developed by the residents of the Tent City, not by organizers, and the protocol were established about the second day. And so the rules are media is allowed in, but not video cameras unless there's permission.
Okay.
But media has been allowed in for a week and a half.
Okay.
For the past week and a half, yeah.
And has Rich Coleman, the Minister of Housing, has he responded to any of the events that have occurred over the last several weeks?
No, the minister has not responded.
And has there been a letter sent or communication from Vancouver Action or other groups asking for a response from the minister?
Yes, there has.
And nothing from the Ministry of Housing at this point?
Not from the ministry, no. But we have heard back from the city, various city councillors and city staff, and BC Housing. But no, the ministry is regularly non-responsive, not just to this action, but to anything. They're out of touch and non-responsive about basically anything that affects poor people. But
and now, have there been councillors and possibly MLAs that have visited the Tent City on the Hastings location?
Yeah, there have. I'll talk about MLAs that have visited, and secondly, I'll talk about Vision Vancouver because that's a separate cup of tea there. Opposition MLAs have visited many, and they have written official letters to Minister Coleman, and I don't believe that he has responded to those either. The office of Jenny Kwan wrote a letter. Shane Simpson is the homeless critic, and he wrote a letter to the minister. And various others have visited. We had some Liberal MPs visit, and they were quite supportive and impressed with homeless people.
Which MPs visited?
Joyce Murray visited several times.
Okay.
And but Vision Vancouver has not visited. And although the city has responded to some of our letters in dialogues, they have not. They have not shown a desire to communicate on an equal level or to send anyone to work with us. It's interestingly enough, their Vision Vancouver's public statements are that they support the Tent Village and they support its aims of a national housing strategy, which is not the only aim of the Tent Village. So they've basically been trying to pretend like they support it more than they actually do. We haven't had any support from them at all. We wish that we did.
Do you think this is a matter of them realizing that they're going to be facing a re-election coming up soon?
Well, I think that they don't want to... Well, they want people to think that they're doing a good job on homelessness, since that was the number one platform for Mayor Robertson, that
so
he was going to
end
homelessness,
yeah.
But they don't want people to know that they're not working with the actual residents or homeless people on the ground, and they're not really working well with them, and there's not agreement on a lot of things. So there's not agreement on gentrification as an issue. Gentrification is a massive issue in the downtown east side. The lot that we're squatting is going to have 160 condo units unless we stop it. There's two other condo developments on the same block across the street. Across from Woodward's, which is Kitty Corner, three hotels closed down last month. People got evicted, and they're renovating for I don't even know what, because it happens just in the past couple of weeks. They're doing it right now. Gentrification is happening very quickly, and we're going to try to stop it. And Vision Vancouver is not only not on our side, but is actively working with developers to expedite gentrification. So that is a place where there's not any agreement at all.
Well, Tristan, thank you. Is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah. On Sunday, there's going to be a celebration at the Tent Village. It's the two-week anniversary. We've held this empty lot that was used by Vanock for parking for the Olympics. We've held it for 2 weeks, and there's going to be food and music at 4:30 on Sunday.
Okay, well, thank you, Tristan. We really appreciate you joining us live on CITR News 101. Thanks again.
Yeah, thanks so much for covering it.
Take care.
Bye.
That was Tristan Markle, an organizer with Vancouver Action, a group that is working to address the homeless situation in the city. And that's our program for Friday, February 26th, 2010. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @CITRNews and get our latest updates. Brad Pepping produced this radio program. For more news, join us next Monday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. We'll be bringing you coverage of the closing ceremonies demonstration, along with the wrap-up of the Tent City, the celebration that Tristan Markle mentioned, and further analysis of the 2010 Winter Olympics here in Vancouver. I'm Andrew Longhurst from the entire news team at CITR. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Play-by-Play Sports right here on 101.9 FM CITR. I think